Welcome to the Finance Geeks Podcast with Paul Kluwerth and Warren Shute. Two financial planners shoot the breeze while sharing tips for making the most of your money and living your best life. Expect a lot of laughs and genuine insights that might just transform the way you look at your finances. Remember to follow, like, and subscribe to the show. And now over to the geeks in the studio.
But they are not in a studio. They are geeks in their own office.
Hello and welcome to episode 8 of the Finance Geeks podcast. Thanks for joining us. My name is Warren Shute and I'm here joined by
Paul Kluwerth.
And today we're geeking out, talking about financial rules of thumb. So, Paul, what have you been up to?
So I've been busy. I'm always busy. Yeah. What have I been up to? I've been
karting.
The karting thing. Well, we'll get onto karting. I've been getting solar panels commissioned. I've got these solar panels in the garden, and I'm trying desperately to get them commissioned because the company I installed them didn't commission them correctly. They didn't do the DNO, which is the application to UK power networks for exporting energy back to the grid. They didn't do that properly. So I'm getting that sorted. But what's good news is my energy costs, my actual, you know, it's with British Gas, my electricity costs have come down by more than a half in the last month. So it shows that they're working. I know the app's working. I'm just dead excited. Renewable energy, come on. Yeah, so loads, you know, as soon as it gets sunny, my wife puts on the iron, puts on the heater. She's like, come on, let's use the electricity. Which is great. But you know, clean energy, I'm all about that. And at Tandem, we recycle stuff. We use an Altherma for an air source heat pump. Yeah. We send money back to ecology to reduce our carbon footprint. I'm all for it.
Good.
Secondly, I've been getting organized this week. I've been taking a leaf out of my own book by, I had a meeting with my wife 2 days ago in the boardroom. And we talked about, for 20 minutes, we said, let's get some dates in the diary. So we had to get somewhere neutral to get dates in for date nights, for taking the kids out for half term, for some holidays. And I know you're very hot on this, about booking things in and getting organized. So we did that. Lunches, as I say, what else? And Catherine, my practice manager, has put a date in the diary to clean my office. Operation clean Paul's office.
Is it that bad?
So there's stuff everywhere. And it just, I don't even want to show you behind the scene here because there's too much stuff everywhere.
That's brilliant.
My boys are coming back from school soon and we're going to do some more gym sessions. So I've been doing gym sessions myself, but I'm doing it with them. So
they're working out with you?
Yes, for about half an hour. Miles has did it twice last week. Rory's doing it tonight, about 5 o'clock, quarter past five. So and he's only 9. And we saw him in front of the mirror, my wife did yesterday, and he had his arms up like this, the sort of Arnie pose. Probably been seeing me in the bathroom or something. Look at me muscles.
We got a photo of Ollie when he was about 9 doing that actual same thing.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's a boy thing. He wants to follow in his brother's footsteps, and Miles is 12, so he wants to, you know, Miles is thin and you know, getting tall very quickly, and he's nearly a teenager, so he wants to look after himself, and love it, the fact he wants to get fit, you know, great.
Yeah, absolutely. Get them addicted to that rather than anything else. You know, it's fantastic. Yeah. You know, I think exercise, nutrition, it's brilliant.
Yes, definitely. A little birdie told me that you had a birthday recently. I think we might have touched on it last episode, that you were coming up to it, the big half century. How was
it? Big 5-0. It was awesome. It was phenomenal. My wife was so fantastic. She did so many surprises. It was great. So
she's not trading you in for a younger model?
No, I'm a keeper, she said. I'm all right. I'm at least safe for the next 12 months anyway, put it that way.
You don't look a day over 49.
Oh, you're so sweet. Thank you very much. It's like skincare I've been using, no doubt.
Oh, that'll be it, yes.
Pop over to the YouTube channel. You'll check it out.
Very good. So, and you went away, didn't you? Where did you go?
I didn't. Yep. So I went away to Boston. So my wife and I, she booked me a surprise trip. My father was born in Boston or just outside of Boston, but we've never been there. And the kids weren't exactly excited about going. So just me and Nick went over 5 nights and had a fantastic time. Really, really good. Nice. Key fact about Boston, which was really fascinating. It's where the revolution started. Okay. And
Boston Tea Party.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that was a little bit after, but when the revolution started was on the 18th of April, which is my birthday.
Is that right?
Yeah, in a place called Lexington.
No.
Which is the name of my firm. I'm not kidding you. You look it up. The American Revolution started on the 18th of April in a place called Lexington. We were blown away by this fact. So we're wandering around. We had tour guide shirts around and stuff like that. And yeah, it was good. It was a pretty cool place. I really enjoyed it.
Tremendous. Does this made you look on Wikipedia to look at all the Revolutionary War and just do some research? Have you seen Hamilton, by the way? Have you seen Hamilton, the musical? Oh,
Hamilton's fantastic. Yes, fantastic. Yeah. Do you enjoy it?
Think of that. Yeah, I've been 7 times. That's a bit excessive.
Sorry, you've been 7 times.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you forget what it was saying the first time?
I think I could play every part, actually. That's what you tell yourself after a bit. So the second time I went, the first time you like hear, I don't know, 50% of it, because it's rap, isn't it? So
yeah.
So we sort of didn't really get it all. We sort of knew what it was about, sort of. But then the next time, we watched it together again, and we got more of it. And then the third time I went on my own. And my wife's been on her own a few times. I went on my birthday and I thought, I'm going to go to this. And the tickets are quite expensive. But I was drunk and I was just singing along. And then they nearly threw me out. Because I was singing along. I was so excited singing all the songs.
You were drunk on your birthday watching Hamilton on your own.
Well, it wasn't actually the day of my birthday. I think it was the day before or the day after. But I thought, I'm going to London for a day on my own. And I included a ticket to Hamilton.
I liked the second half more than the first half, so I kind of got into it more. Yeah. But I did really, really like it. And I probably would go and see it again, but I definitely wouldn't go and see it 7 times.
Yeah. Well, talking about the theatre, my wife loves the theatre and anything sort of, culture-based. And we're hopefully going to take the kids to watch Mrs. Doubtfire at the end of May if we can get tickets, because lots of other great stuff on, but not suitable for children. And it been up to anything else?
No, not really. I had the 5 days in Boston. My wife threw me a surprise birthday party on the Saturday, which was nice. Lots of friends came down I didn't expect to see. And just it was quite small. It was just people I'd known for like 30 plus years.
I was going to say, I didn't get an invite. Yeah, so
it was small. It was small. You're on the next list.
Won't hold that. do you know what happened on the 23rd of April? Because we are today the 25th of April. Do you know what happened on the 23rd of April?
I landed back in London. I don't know.
23rd of April is St. George's Day. Yes. And so on the Saturday, on the 20th of April, we went to Rest Park, which is English Heritage. And we took the kids and the dog, and it was great because there are lots of people dressing up and they pitch all these tents. And it's, And then I put in the show notes a link, which I found quite interesting, which was everything you need to know about St. George. And I just didn't realize at all how long ago, you know, St. George was and what it was to do with. And a lot of the things that you think about are not true or correct about St. George. It's nothing to do with George the King. It's St. George. It was, 2,000 years ago or whatever. And
when dragons roamed the earth.
I got it all wrong. What's that? Yeah, when dragons roamed the earth. There's this depiction of the knight and the slaying of the dragon, and that's all got a history as part of it. But it sort of develops in it. Anyway, there is a interesting, there's two links in the show notes. One's everything you need to know about St. George's Day and St. George. And the next thing is 9 things you didn't know about St. George. So have fun reading those if you're in any way patriotic.
So before we lose any listeners, let's just say, what's hot off the press this week?
So, hot off the press. I've got quite a few things here, so you'll have a fun time covering these. I think there's been quite a lot going on and things that I've been reading. So, there's been a lot of, nonsense and frenzy going on about Bitcoin, right? Crazy stories about the increase in Bitcoin and so forth. And, it was to do with I think it was the 20th of April as well, the Bitcoin has halved. So there's the Bitcoin halving every 4 years. And I was like, what the heck does that mean? So the Bitcoin halving reduces the block reward for miners by 50%. It means the rate at which new Bitcoins enter circulation is cut in half. Sorry. And the immediate impact on the Bitcoin price might not be significant, but the halving is supposed to theoretically expect to give longer term effects on supply and demand. And there's been certain people, there's a guy called Matt Haugen of the CIA of Bitwise. He's put articles out that reckons that Bitcoin will initially fall, but then eventually go back up to 250,000. And these are people with vested interests. So it made me think about get rich quick schemes and how loads of people out there have invest in this. It's not even investment, but they put their money into this complete gamble, Bitcoin, with the premise that they're going to get rich soon. And some people do make a bit of money through luck and get it in and out at the right time, but most people probably don't. And it's interesting because there's a constant barrage of messages today and of this notion of intensifying the fear of FOMO. You know, people do have this fear of missing out. And this, there's this flashy illusion that you're going to get wealthy quickly, because perhaps it's for those that need, maybe it's their midlife, mid-career, maybe it's their late 40s, 50s, maybe they haven't got enough in their ISAs and pensions, and they say, right, I'm going to put money in this Bitcoin because I'm going to make loads of money. But the reality is the people that are pushing all those articles about how much money you're going to make are ones that are going to benefit. So yeah, in the main, you do not invest in Bitcoin unless you've got money to lose, is my advice. What do you say to your clients about Bitcoin when they ask you? Do you just skirt over it quickly?
No. I'm less dismissive than a lot of financial advisors, a bit evangelical about it. They're like, yeah, don't do it. And I agree, it's not an investment completely. But I also agree that we live in a world where things are changing and developing. And for some clients, having some money in there, if they really want to, as a speculation, that's fine. You know, client of mine, as a percentage, maybe 1%, you know, it's, you know, I'm not talking huge sums of money. So I own
10 grand on a million. Yeah.
Yeah.
10,000 on a million. If you put that in, if you're prepared to lose that, you know, you might be all right. And what happens if it doubles in value? Do they then put more in, or do they get out at the right time? Or is it just a play fund,
In reality, when you say to clients, hey, look, you can do this if you want to, they raise it. Obviously, I don't raise it. If they raise it, I say, look, you can do this. Well, this is how much I'd suggest if you want to do it. Very, very few go through with it. I've got one client who works in IT, and the sod never told me what he was doing, but he invested right early in the days. And I think he had at the time about 4 or 5 coins. He did particularly well out of it. And over the years, he sort of divested from it. But
I think it's gone up to, went up to 72,000 or something. Now it's floating around 63,000. It's something like that per Bitcoin. A bit crazy. Do you know the other thing, the other get rich quick scheme, or the other thing that people have invested in recently, which is a bit more of an investment, but not a true investment insofar as it doesn't pay income, is gold. So one of my hot off the press things is that gold hit an all time high of what was 2,448.8 on the 12th of April. That's dollars per troy ounce. And it's fallen back to 2,334 today. And it's due to really this sort of notion of it being a safe haven. And it's there's the concept that originally there was the thought that inflation, during periods where inflation's high, owning gold is a reputation for maintaining the value during periods of inflation, and that the track record doesn't necessarily support that. But the other is there's this notion that it's a store of value, and that people have owned it as a way of diversifying. And then lastly, there's the concept that it's expected to hold up in so-called risk-off markets, and so when investors tend to flee from riskier assets like equities, that there's this perception that you can move into gold because it's a safe haven. And because a lot of the investors at the moment think that equities are at a high point, it's moved over to gold. And they've said, oh, I'll buy more gold. And it's pushed up the price about 15% this year. The thing that's happened recently, though, it's come down because there's a perception that US interest rates are going to actually not come down very quickly because of expected inflation that's going to incur in both the UK and the US. So we could be in for a period of longer, you know, higher inflation for longer. And that previously, a month or 2 months ago, I would have said, oh, interest rates might come down at the end of the year. They may well not do now. But what about yourself? What's your thoughts on gold?
Again, it's like Bitcoin. You know, if clients really want to own it, I say, you know, buy some then, but don't allocate more than 1% of your portfolio. It's not something we would put in to a portfolio by default. There's no real need for it.
It doesn't pay an income, and you cannot own Krugerrands. You can buy a gold ETC, an exchange traded commodity fund. You can, you know, there's various ways to own it.
It hasn't
long term, it's not. It's not done as well, unless you'd have got in right at the right time. You know, specifically the right time, and then perhaps sold out or whatever. But talking about highs as well, the FTSE 100, you know, it peaked at 8,106 today, in fact. It's the highest it's ever been. It's ever been. And it's interesting that the perception is, oh, well, everything's going great because the FTSE is going up. It's actually the case that it isn't a sign that the UK economy is recovering well or improving dramatically. It's due to the notion of expected falling UK interest rates, which reduces the value of sterling and increases profits from overseas. And there's an article I put in the show notes from a Sky article on this, which talks about this very concept, that if the value of sterling reduces, a lot of the UK companies generate a lot of their revenue from abroad. And even the threat of falling interest rates or falling sterling value means that UK equities can rise. But it could be good for investors because they make a bit more money. However, it's not great for the UK economy. No. It's not completely comparable. No. So
the FTSE is also high in commodity type companies as well.
Yeah, telecoms, commodities, oil companies. Yeah, you're right.
So commodities is a main sort of risen. But you know, as a long term investor, these three things that Paul's been discussing really are noise. And we sort of discuss them with you to air it so you get an idea of, okay, it's always I could ignore it. But really, the more you could ignore it and just focus on a globally diversified portfolio and sit tight, the better you're going to do.
I just want to raise one more thing because it is a hot off the press topic. It's something that people will read about in the papers and listen about and think about. It ties in directly to what you just said about owning global equities and diversifying, as opposed to owning a concentrated portfolio. The Tesla share price has fallen again, if you like. It was as high as $371 in 2021, at $162 today. It's fallen 57% from its peak. And it's partly due to them shelving their inexpensive electric car. They were going to say, oh, we're going to bring out another Tesla that's $25,000 for the masses and sell millions of them. But they've shelved it. And it doesn't mean that it's a terrible stock. It doesn't mean that it's not going to go back up, but it's incredibly volatile. And I think that investing means 7 to 10 years plus, 10 years plus, you know, medium to long term. It means low cost, diversified, index based funds, massively diversified. And that's what it means. It doesn't mean one share.
You're on the money there. I think they did announce they're going to release that car in the last couple of days. I think their share price just popped up like 12%. But you're absolutely right. Only one share is too risky. It's not worth it. You know, globally diversified, that's the way to go forward.
That's speculating, isn't it? Owning a few shares. Yeah. That's not proper investing.
I think so. Yeah, but you're not. Hey, look, I'm not evangelical about it. I have some clients who enjoy doing it and therefore will set up a SaaS-like portfolio. They like buying in and out and trading these companies. And I even do some of it myself sometimes because it's enjoyable. I don't have the bulk of my money in there by a long shot. I've got my portfolio and that's what I just buy. But hey, it's quite nice. I read The Economist. I see that, was it called Wegovy, the weight loss drug that's doing well, buy some of that, you know, Endivia is doing well, but it's fun, it's enjoyable. But I guarantee you, I don't do as well on those overall as I do my portfolio, but it's quite nice to think I do sometimes.
Most of the benefit from it is down to luck than it is skill.
Absolutely. Yeah, completely that, you know, completely that. And the risk you carry is you think you're good. So when I started back in 95, I started investing in the US stock market and I piggybacked on the dot-com bubble. So the likes of Cisco Systems, Yahoo and stuff, I thought I was a really good investor. I thought I was a smart aleck. And then come the 2000 crash, I lost a chunk of money. I was like, wow, okay, that really woke me up. It made me realize that you can't be smarter than the market. Just buy the market, sit tight and allow it to do its work.
On that point, that's a great point to end to move on to our focal point, which is...
financial rules of thumb.
Do you know what financial rules of thumb are? Do you know what the English word that describes a financial rule of thumb, what it actually is? Go on, I'm going to see how clever you are now.
I don't know, Paul. Why don't you tell me what this is?
It's a heuristic. And a heuristic is a mental shortcut commonly used to simplify problems and avoid cognitive overload.
But you can't say how smart you are and then read out what you've just said.
Well, I didn't say I am smart. You're not. It's difficult for me to speak to someone as dumb as yourself on a constant basis without consuming a huge amount of cough medicine.
I do appreciate
my
it.
Senses. No, listen. Heuristics, I think it's important to know that word because they're part of how the human brain's evolved and how it's wired, and it allows individuals to sort of quickly reach reasonable conclusions or solutions to complex problems. So the solutions might not be optimal, but are often sufficient to give limited timeframes and calculative capacity.
We should do a whole show on those.
What's that? We should. There's some brilliant heuristics. There are mental shortcuts. But it goes hand in hand with the concept of what's a financial rule of thumb? It's a shortcut in some way to work out something complicated to solve a problem. So why don't you kick off and give me some of your financial rules of thumb that you, perhaps the ones that you use with your clients, your favorite ones.
Okay. So the one I probably use the most often and the one that's got the most attention when I've written articles for the press and things like that is the 50-30-20 allocation. So when you're a financial advisor, financial planner, you're speaking to a client, you're looking at sort of options in what's available to them, what's coming in, what's going out. And quite often not, they'll say, oh, I earn this amount of money, I spend this amount of money. And you'll say, oh, congratulations, you've got X hundred thousands of pounds left over each month or each year. And they'll say, no, I don't have that. And there's a thing called spending creep where they actually just tend to spend within reason about what comes in on various different things. They don't sort of allocate it. So we kind of use the premise of saying, okay, try and spend about 50% of the money that comes in on your household living expenses, your bills, your regular payments. And we suggest they have a bills account, so one account where all their direct debits and standing orders come out of. And then we say have around about 30% of the money each month to go on your general day-to-day spending. So your what we refer to as WAM money, your walkabout money. So money you'll spend every day on your grocery shopping, fueling your car, getting your haircut, going out, that kind of thing. And then allocate about 20% of your money towards short and long-term saving. So putting that away for the future, whether it's into a bank account, building up an emergency reserve, or allocating it onto overpayment onto your mortgage, or putting it into your pension, that kind of thing. So the 50-30-20 allocation is not something that we created. It's quite well popularized online, but it's something that we do use with our clients, and that's how we tend to use it.
As an example there, if someone's earning, for easy maths, £5,000 a month net income, £1,000, 20% would be allocated towards their pension and ISAs and so forth. And I think that for our listeners, do consider your monthly net income and say, well, are you allocating 20% to medium to long-term savings, combination of ISAs, pensions? You'll be doing pension through work, I suspect. Yeah. And if you're doing that, you could maybe factor that into this notion. But it'd be better if it was 20%.
I think it's
as well as the one on to work, well as that, you're going to build up a bigger pot.
Yeah, we would go 20% of what you bring in. Your employer's paying, that's part of your package, but you really, you've got 80% to do other things with, 20% for yourself. Yeah. And Ollie, my son, I'm about to sit down with Ollie, my son. He's just about to start earning some money. And I said, look, you really need to be allocating some money for the future. And I'll go through this with him, just have these these rule of thumbs. So
if you stick to it, you're just way more likely to have a better financial experience, if you like, and build up a financial pot of money for your long-term future is no question. It's tricky to be strict with yourself.
Yeah. It is, yeah. How about you? You got something to share with us?
So I think what I'll do is start with the ones that go hand in hand with that one, actually, because I've got a sort of rule where I would say to clients, 5 to 10% would be for savings, 10 to 15% would be pensions, to try and separate the... And similarly, we did a budget planner, which I'll put in the show notes for a download, where I would say, look, how would you allocate your monthly income? And it's to do with your age as well as the level of your income and how much surplus income you have. But very generically, I would say if you've got a mortgage, about a third, 40% max would be on the repayment mortgage, capital and interest mortgage. So 5,000 would be equal to 1,666 up to £2,000 on a repayment basis. It shouldn't be interest only. If it's interest only and it's costing 40% of your monthly income, that's you can't afford it. How are you going to pay off the capital? So if it's a third, give or take, into the mortgage, it might be 5 to 10 savings, 10 to 15 into pension, and I would often say between sort of 4 and 6% for protection solutions. Again, it's all that, this is generic, but again, these are rules of thumb. Yeah. So for someone who's earning 5,000 and it's 4 to 6% of your income, £200 to £300 a month would be a combination of life cover, KIC, income protection, private medical. Because if you don't do that, you see in a cash flow, a client's incomes, and they got way more allocated to holidays than perhaps they realistically can afford, and hardly anything to savings. And you're saying, well, your protection, you just can't get what you want for £20 a month for 1% or 0.5% of your income. It's like, what do you expect? So these rules of thumb are meant to try and say, well, this is realistic. This is what, if you did this, you'd be covering your shortfalls, you'd be saving for your future, you'd be paying down your mortgage. Those percentage allocations, that's my next one.
And I guess though the protection allocation might start off with life covering protection as our accumulators. And as they get wealthier, it might switch towards maybe whole of life to cover inheritance tax and things.
Yeah, absolutely. And the private medical insurance tends to go up every year. And when you're older, it costs more. So that things would go up. And other things like your mortgage costs when it's paid off. You say, well, how do I allocate that 33 to 40% that I was paying on that elsewhere? And the answer is you'll probably spend it on saving to cash, holidays, other living expenses.
Yeah. Okay.
So why don't we talk about, why don't you go for another one and we'll alternate.
Sticking to the same sort of theme then. And I do this often when I talk to audiences, because these rules of thumb are great for getting information across quickly as a principle, but to save the first hour of a working day for your future. And that generally works out for an 8-hour day, about 12.5%. So make sure the first hour of you get into the office at, say, 8:30. So between 8:30 and 9:30, that hour of work, you're going to put that away so you can retire early. That works about 12.5% of your income.
Okay, that works. That's a good rule of thumb. Like that.
Yeah, just quite a nice, simple one.
What about the, we talked about investing earlier and the way that we like to encourage our clients to invest, but there's the rule of 72. And the rule of 72, it's a sort of a formula that calculates how long it will take an investment to double in value based on its rate of return. One of the rates that I talk about a lot to clients and give the example of is 7.25. I usually add the five. But 7.2. And I say, well, your money will double in value every 10 years if you get about 7.2% return, because that's annualized, compounded. And so if you've got a 3% return annually, you know, it's 72 divided by 3 to give you the number of years it will take before it doubles in value. So the rule, it applies to compound interest rates, and it's accurate when the rate of return is between 6 and 10% a year. You know, there's different rules you can use if it's much more or less than that. But it's quite useful because assets, you know, invested assets, certainly with a high level of global equities, should theoretically double every 10 years.
Yeah. Okay. I like that one too. Okay. So the rule of 300.
Yeah. Go on then. Rule of 300.
Yeah, so when we're looking at, okay, how much do I need to retire? It's a great question. Almost every financial advisor on the planet gets asked when they're at a dinner party, you know, how much do I need to retire? How much is enough? And as a general rule, it's about 300 times your monthly required income. Now, it is a general rule because we take into account defined benefit pension schemes and state pension schemes and such like. But as a general rule, if you've got 300 times your monthly required income as a capital sum of money, that's going to generate enough income at 4% to cover your income requirements. So £1,000 a month income, a lump sum of £300,000 is going to generate about £12,000 a year, £1,000 a month.
Yeah, good one. I like that. We touched on it in a previous episode about talking about budgeting and cash flow and stuff, but it's definitely a good rule, the rule of 300. Talking about investing, there's the 100 minus your age. That's a rule. Yes. Now, sometimes it's 110 or 120 minus your age, and it's to do with the level of asset allocation. Assets being cash, bonds, property, equity. The two big allocations are equity and bonds. So if you were age 30, if you're age 50, you know, you could have 100 minus your age. So you could have a 50-50 portfolio. 50% bonds, 50% equities. But, you know, rule in itself is a little bit old hat. And I think that if you took it as 120 minus your age, because you're going to live longer, you know, statistically, then you say 120 minus 50, that's 70. So should I have 70% in equities, stocks and shares, 30% in bonds? Even that, I'm 100% equities. Are you?
Yeah.
Yours?
100%
global equities. Yeah. Tell me, clients, that the starting point for investing is 100% global equities. You add bonds, not for growth, but to reduce levels of volatility. Oh. So even though this is a rule that's quite well known, 100 minus your age, I'm not sure it works that well today. And it's horses for courses. It's a terrible...
Okay, so while we're on the investing scene, I'll go on to the pension fund values. So Fidelity did a bit of research a couple of years ago, and they came up with the sort of parameters or guidelines of how much you should have saved in your pension fund based on your age. And this really works on the basis that you'd be drawing on a pension fund from age 67. So of course, if you're going to retire earlier, then they won't quite work out. But they say age 30, you should have 1x your salary in your pension fund, or I assume really it should be 1x your desired income that you want from retirement. Age 35, 2x. At age 40, 3x. Age 45, 4x. 56 times, 55, 7x. 68 times, and then at 67, about 10x. So they're working on the basis you're 10 times your salary is a retirement pot.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see how that could work. I mentioned to you earlier, one of the ones that I like to use as a rule of thumb is that at the point of achieving financial independence, let's say that's age 60, the value of your pension should ideally be the same value of your house. So if you live in a £1 million house, you should have a £1 million pension. It's a rule of thumb. It's not exactly the case, but I think that's not a... You rarely get someone who lives in a £1 million house that gets to 60 and has a £200 pension.
No, but I guess unusual. It should be at least the same, maybe more, would you say?
At least the same. Yeah, I think so. I mean, if you take it in real life, if someone's doing well for themselves and earning an above average salary, an average salary in the country is 35,000, an above average salary is probably 70 to 100,000. If you're earning an above average salary and you bought a big expensive house in your 30s, for example, and you've got a big mortgage, the value of your house is going to be more than your pension. It will. And as you get older, your mortgage goes down and the amount you go into your pension and it grows, it gets bigger. But at that point in the future, you know, for you to have a reasonable retirement income, I think it's a rule of thumb to have the value of your pension the same value as your house. And then on top of that, you might have ISAs, you might have some cash, you might have some other investments. That's a pretty good setup.
So that leads me really nicely on to my next rule of thumb. Okay. So, well, it's basically around car finance. So not so much now, but we still have a few professional sports people as clients. And they would always rock up to the office in these really expensive, flashy cars. But then they'd be really reluctant to put any money away for their retirement or their future. They would basically just all this money coming in. All they want to do is save tax and they just want to spend all their money. So we kind of came out with the rule of thumb and say, look, you've got to put away at least as much as your car finance for your retirement, for your future. So they'd come in spending at least, you know, £1,500 on maybe having two of those on a couple of cars. And we're like, look, you really should be putting the same amount of money away for your future as well. So our rule of thumb is to save at least as much as your car finance is, whether that's £1,500 or £300, whatever it might be.
Do you? I thought you said twice as much.
No, at least as much. No. Just as least. At least as much. Yeah. Just as least. Yeah. Just as least as much. But twice as much would be. Twice as much would be better, obviously.
It would. And when we talk about these, allocating your monies on a monthly basis and to various things, saving, spending, and so forth. You know, it obviously is quite generic, but the point is you can't save all your money and spend it all, and you can't also save it all and then not have a life. You don't want to defer gratification and save 80% of your income. So, do obviously take advice and think it through based on an individual basis. But the car rule one, got another car rule finance rule for you, financial rule of thumb, the 20-4-10 rule. It's this notion that if you buy a new car, it's best to pay cash ideally. But if you do borrow, you should put 20% down. The finance would be over 4 years as a maximum. That's the four. And the 10% is that don't put down more than 10% of your income towards the car. So if you earn £5,000 a month, £500 for the car finance. And it's about limiting the type of vehicle you'll buy. I have seen a lot of clients that can't really afford, in my opinion, to buy a Range Rover £80,000 costing.
Oh, yeah.
But they buy it because it's a status symbol and they're doing it to the detriment of other things in their life, specifically saving for the future.
Just come to mind something we do with pocket money. So this is something we do with our own kids and something I've advocated in when I've done educational talks and things like that is giving pocket money to your children. We're very much into them earning the money. And we link the amount of money they get to their age. So my kids, when they were 10, they got £2 for each year of their age. They got £20 a month. Okay. At 15, they got £30, £2 for each of their age. They would buy their wants, we'd buy their needs. So, you know, in these school trips, school uniforms, that kind of thing. But if they wanted to buy some stuff in the supermarket or shopping, they would use their pocket money for that. And then we, as another rule of thumb, as a side of that, what we say to them is anything up to your monthly allowance, you can buy. So if it's something costs £15 and you're getting £15 a month, you feel you want to buy it, you can buy it. But if it's more than that, I want you to check in with us first. So anything up to your monthly allowance, bring it to us. So son used to buy computer games, maybe a £30 computer game, come to us. Okay, do you really want this? Do you think you're going to play it? If you found it anywhere cheaper online, okay, give us 24 hours, come back. And he'd come back and they say, I still want it, Dad. Okay, go ahead and buy it. And that has really enabled them to make smart money decisions.
Well, it's a check and balance system at least, isn't it? Because it's also a chance to think it through and have somebody else, you know, help you with the decision. Because even at a small basis, kids have got to learn somewhere as to what value for money is, and is, does it make sense to buy this? I mean, my children not so long ago wanted to spend, they said, we've worked it out, we want to spend £80 on Robux. Robux is the currency in the game, Roblox. And they, as any parent with children of, you know, sub 13 would know. But, you know, I said, and they said, oh, if we do it this way, and I transfer it to him and we get these amount of points, I said, you really want to spend £80 of your savings? And they had birthday money and Christmas money on a digital currency to spend on, you know, wraps and things in the car and games and, you know, guns and, you know, things. It's just like, what? Skins. It's another thing. Apparently it's a thing, skins. And I said to them, no, you're just not doing it.
Well, that's so good, though.
I think I ended up buying them £20 worth of it between them of Robux. And then they bought things with that, skins and stuff of the game. But this is the big companies. Roblox is a sort of listed company on the NASDAQ or something, or the S&P. A massive listed company. Yeah, huge. Share price, everything. But Microsoft, that own Xbox, of course, you buy games. The games are 50, 60, 70 quid, outrageous. You buy them online now, but then you can buy things in the games. You know, these monthly costs, these extra colors and better, faster cars and stuff. And my son's well into it. But it just seems crazy to buy something that's not even tangible at all. Where are the world?
And then another sort of rule of thumb I've sort of said to my kids, so my children are getting older now, and just said, look, you know, for the first sort of 30 years of your life, just really focus on learning more and becoming really great at what you do. Focus on education over salary. You know, don't look for the job that's going to pay you the most salary. Look for the job that's going to give you the most opportunities and allow you to progress in your field. And then the next 30 years, so we've gone from 30 to 60 now, really that should be focused on building your career and saving, putting money away, start accumulating, paying down debt, getting a mortgage, paying it down, putting money into your pensions, build that money up. So then when you get to around 60, the third 30 years of your life, you can then enjoy that money and sit back and you've worked hard for it, you've got a good education, and then you can make sure you spend it and get rid of it all.
I like that. Third. Yeah.
Yeah.
Who knows what they're going to do at 18 or 21? You've got an idea. You might have a dream, but it never really works out that way due to circumstance, experience, luck, you know, and so forth. But, you know, you try one thing and then it becomes another. But probably by 30, you've tried a few jobs maybe. You've found your career and then it starts to develop in it. So I like that. Third. Very good.
Yeah. I think we can rush into things too quickly as well, can't we?
Oh, definitely. My wife's niece she's young, 21, out of university, and I'm not saying this is in any way a bad decision, but the point is she's got a career, she's doing well for herself, she's a lawyer, she's decided to buy a house, and that's great, fantastic, with a boyfriend, and it's a testament to ability to herself to be able to do that. The point I'm making is it's still quite early to do that. You know, if one's decided that's the career I want, that's great. You know what you want. And it's every different things bring different people happiness, but it's still quite early, and you don't have to rush into these things. Do you know the other rule of thumb with regards to not rushing into things, but to do things first is we skipped over it in a previous episode, I think, but it's just as simple as paying yourself first.
Yeah,
and it's an old rule of thumb that helps you save rather than spend all your money. So even if your budget is tight. The concept is to put some money into savings as soon as you get paid. That's paying yourself. And you're saving first rather than last. So it means you're much more likely to save the money rather than spend it. And I think you use this with some of your clients, don't you? This concept of paying yourself first.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'm passionate about it. I think I first read about it in The Rich Man of Babylon. I think I was in that book there.
It's not what's left at the end of the month, is it? It's not saying, I'll just save what's left.
Which is how most people operate. You know, they'll pay. But if you think about it, if you're an employee, HMRC and the government have got this nailed, right? They don't allow you to get paid. And then when everything else is settled, then pay your taxes. They want their taxes first. And what I would say is you should be equally as important as HMRC. So they pay the taxes, you pay your 20%, and then you've got the rest of it to enjoy and adapt your lifestyle to that. So, yeah, evangelical about making sure you pay yourself first. Otherwise, you're on this hamster wheel that you'll never get off. And it's not when I earn more money, because when you earn more money, your desires, your travel plans, your house, your car all increase proportionally, typically. So your lifestyle will just keep growing. You have to just draw a line in the sand and say, right, as of today, I will.
I've got four more rules of thumb. How many have you got?
I've got no more, but I'm just looking at the time. So you want to click through
a couple of them? I'll whiz through them. Don't worry. Okay. I'll whiz through them. Turn them dead quick.
Go on.
So the first of the four is, when you're thinking about life insurance, how much should I have? 10 times your salary is quite typical. I mean, I've seen 20 times written in certain rules of thumb. I thought, well, that's a lot. You know, if you're on 50,000, £500,000 of cover is reasonable and probably affordable. 20 times is a lot.
Well, yeah, but if you relate it back to the rule of 300, it should be 25 times. That makes sense?
Well, but as you get older and your pot grows in value, the relevance of life insurance is less. You need probably less. So it's this rule of thumb is not specific advice. Next one, expenses and emergency fund. We talked about it previously, but having 3 to 6 months worth of your expenses in an emergency fund is quite common and a fairly reasonable rule of thumb. So I generally say 6 months when you hit retirement. But if you're building your assets and you're employed, you know, 3 months is probably enough of your income for just cash pot. The rest can be allocated.
Yeah.
The third of the last four I was mentioning is the rule of 10. It's the 10-10-10 rule. Never heard of it before, looked it up, thought, oh, this is quite interesting. It's a transformative approach that involves examining the potential impact of our decisions over distinct time horizons. So when you've got a decision, you're faced with a choice, you're encouraged to consider the effects of your decision over the next, and how it'll affect you over the next 10 minutes, the next 10 months, and the next 10 years. I don't know if that's got any legs.
No, it has.
It's about perspective. It's about thinking about things from a perspective. Yeah.
And I think so many people don't even consider their decisions. They just do it. You know, I've certainly know people, they've made some decision. I'm like, why did you do that? Do you not think anything through? And sometimes it's not age related. They could be older and you think you should know better. So that 10, 10, 10. Okay. How are things going to be in 10 minutes if I make a decision? No, 10 months, 10 years. Yeah, I like that.
Do you know, when I was a child, I remember the lots of things that my mum would say to me, but one of them was, that's your problem. You just don't think.
It's true though, right?
Isn't
it's
it true? True. You just don't think, and as a child, you don't think it's true. That's why it's quite nice being a child. consequences, what are they? Live irresponsibly, tremendous. It's when you get into your 30s, 40s, 50s that times are tough and you've got to actually think about responsibilities and your decisions you've got to make. So the last one before we move on to two pennies worth is the Pareto principle, the 80-20 rule. So it's a classic. It's also known as the law of the vital few and the principle of factor sparsity. That one's a bit geeky. And it states that for many outcomes, roughly 80% of the consequences come from 20% of the causes. But in business, we generally say something like 80% of your sales come from 20% of your clients, or 80% of your reward comes from 20% of your efforts, you know, and it's quite accurate, to be honest, the 80-20 rule, the Pareto principle. Surprisingly.
And I think the key to success is really knowing that and spending your time on the 20. Does that make sense? Yeah. But people still often operate on the 100 because they do everything equally. But if you spend the time on the 20, you enhance the 80.
So, it comes down to efficiency. And in the show notes, I've put a Wikipedia link to the 80-20 principle, and it tells you the whole history of it, and it's quite long actually. I must say on Wikipedia, because it's a free resource and it's something like one of the top seven websites that people go to in the world, I got an email from them saying can you contribute, and I thought, you know what? I use Wikipedia all the time, it's a brilliant resource, and so I contributed 10 whole pounds and 40p for the extra cost of them the transaction. So
good for you.
Now they keep emailing me asking me for more money. Oh dear! You've got to do these things, haven't you? It's fair.
It is. No, absolutely. Yeah, when you're using a resource, so anything like that, I think it's the right thing to do. So I quite like it. Anyway, sir.
Should we move on?
Your two pennies worth.
Go on. I've been rabbiting on. What's your two pennies worth? Tell me.
Is it this app? It's an app. Okay, and I think it's absolutely fantastic. It's really, really
absolutely fantastic.
It's absolutely fantastic.
That's like an egg joke, isn't it? It's excellent.
Go
on.
So when I'm in London, I always use City Mapper to get me around. Okay, I arrive in London, you know, I do the map from where I am, the tube station, everything else, how to get around. It is really, really good. When I was in Boston, I was looking at Google Maps, it just wasn't working. I just thought, I'll use City Mapper. And it worked equally as good. So City Mapper is kind of like Google Maps on steroids. I think that's a fair way to say it. Have you ever used it?
No, I haven't. I just use Google Maps, like all normal people.
But I know City Map is a fantastic app. Highly recommend
it. What does it do? What's different again? I wasn't listening. What's different about it?
Okay, so you basically say, how do you want to get from A to B? So public transport, taxi. If you use taxi, it'll tell you the black cab price, Uber price, that kind of thing. In the States, it gave you Lyft. But if you use public transport, it'll tell you which tube to get on, which direction. It'll even tell you which carriage to get on to, because it's the quietest carriage.
Is it cost? Does this app cost?
No, it's free. That's
pretty good, then.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I don't know how they make the money. It's probably adverts on there and things like that. I think you might be able to subscribe to it, because I don't go into the city that often, maybe only once a month or so, I just use the free version. But if I was constantly commuting, definitely. And the nice thing is it works in other cities. So it's not just London. So like I said, when I was in Boston, I got it out. It was fantastic. Used the T-Rail system, I think it's called over there. And it's great. Really, really good. So City Mapper, highly recommend that app to you.
Very good. Do you know, I was trying to think of then more app words to try and bring in that phrase there. It's like, did you apply yourself when you were looking at it? And did you have an apple and just app? I couldn't think of enough of them to make it vaguely amusing. So we can cut that bit out. So ask me, do I have any two pennies worth?
Paul, do you have any two pennies worth?
Do you know what? It's funny that you should ask me. I have got one thing today. I usually have like five things. I've got one thing, right? So I was looking through and I was thinking, I've not watched anything interesting on a film or TV or Netflix or anything recently. I'm rewatching stuff that I've already watched, like Breaking Bad. I'm up to series 3 or 4 or 5 again. I've just watched it because I can't find anything good on. So I'm including in this a book review. And I think this goes hand in hand with my anecdote that I'm going to do after this. But the book is Ryan Holiday, and the book's called The Obstacle is the Way. And I loved, right? Someone introduced me to this book a long time ago. And then Brett Davison put me onto Ego is the Enemy, which is another Ryan Holiday book. And then there's the one that I bought called Stillness is the Key. And then The Little Book of Stoicism. But the Obstacle is the Way. What I love about it is that it's it rewires your thinking, because he says in there, the obstacle in the path becomes the path. Never forget, within every obstacle is an opportunity to improve our condition. And so if you actually make the problem part of your journey and think, right, there's always going to be problems, so I'm just going to have to deal with it. But that's not a hindrance. You know, we all have at least one obstacle we're facing for some frustration, some unexpected problem or an ongoing issue. And if you don't have it now, you will have one in the future. So it's all a question of how you respond. So, you know, what if you got to ask yourself, what if there was a better way to handle it, even if you can't necessarily change or make sense of it? It comes down to your perception and your how you deal with it, your attitude towards it. Because if you do that, you'll deal with it better. So it's about using three key steps. You know, you've got to perceive differently, you've got to take action, and you've got to exert your will.
Okay.
Do you know I used to do door-to-door sales back in the day, 1997 to 2000, for a company called Airpick, right? I loved it. I was good at it, right? But in the sales meetings, they used to say that the managers, who wants problems? And we'd go, me! And you all put your arms up, hands up, right? I want problems. Like, I want this obstacle. And the reason is because they say problems are OFGs, opportunities for growth.
Okay, nice, yeah.
So if you accept the fact that there's going to be problems and you're a brilliant problem solver,
you do, yeah.
This is it. You know, give me problems. I will sort it out. And you just think, I'm going to, it shows resilience. It helps you, live. And if you have problems, it's this notion as well that you can then appreciate what happens at the end of it. If during the problem times are tough and you're a bit miserable, when you come out of it and you solve it, you're then happier and you appreciate happiness.
You do, yeah.
So it's,
Some kind of neuroplasticity or something, I think, in there. That's what Huberman would talk about, I think.
The Greek Stoics said that that you can't control your external circumstances, but you can control how you respond to them.
I completely agree.
Do you like that, Warren?
I do like that. I like your Stoicisms. They're very good.
I love it. I think it's a mindset. More of that, please. More positivity. That's what we want.
You actually said you haven't watched anything good. Can I recommend Red Eye on ITVX? Really
is
good.
That good, is it?
Really good, yeah. Really, really good. I'm only on episode 2, but so far,
I'm going to write
really
that
good.
Down.
Yeah, Red Eye.
Oh, it'll be in the show notes. I'll just look later. Very good. Very good. Okay, great. So should we move on to Q&A, quotes and anecdotes?
Let's go on to Q&A. Would you like me to start?
Yeah, because you've only got like one. You don't do a lot of research for this show, do you? So you said
I've got a couple.
He's got a couple.
I'm going to give you one. Then I'll let you go. Okay, listen to this. Let's keep making memories until we run out of time. Did you like that?
Yes.
Let's keep making memories until we run out of time.
Who said that?
My wife in my birthday card.
Now she stole that from somewhere. She didn't make that. Come on.
She made that up. I said to her she would never ever lie. I was like, wow, that is so profound. I'm going to quote that on my podcast. She goes, oh, don't mention my name. I said, of course, it's so good. Let's keep making memories and do it out of time. And it's so true. And I'm like, let's do that.
Well done, Nikki. That's excellent.
Yeah, well done, Nikki. It's go on, give us some stoicisms.
So I got a couple of quotes. Then I wanted to do, because it's quotes and anecdotes, and we haven't done many anecdotes, I've got three short quotes, but I've got a great anecdote that I wanted to tell everyone about, right? So here's a good one for you to keep you feeling good, right? The greatest glory in living lies not in never failing, but in rising every time we fall.
Oh, yeah.
Nelson Mandela said that. I'll give you another one. The way to get started is to quit talking and begin doing. Mm-hmm. That was Walt Disney. Love that. How many people talk about stuff all the time? I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. It's like, well, get on with it.
Ready, fire, aim.
Yes. Third one. Your time is limited, so don't waste it living someone else's life. Don't be trapped by dogma, which is living with the results of other people's thinking. Steve Jobs.
Okay. I like that one too.
So listen, this anecdote, right? So I saw clients today, 2 hours, 20 minutes team chat. That was quite a lot because you got to look down the camera, you know, you've got to be on form the whole time. And it was lovely because I hadn't seen them in a while, but I spoke to them and we'd emailed and stuff. A couple, he's 57, she's 61, you know, he's the toy boy. They've got two kids as well, two boys, 19 and 23. The wife does some part-time work and I think she's not working currently, but the husband is a BA pilot, a captain. So I'm having this chat and then going through things. And the anecdote is to do with how their circumstances have changed so dramatically in the last couple of years and how positive the meeting was and how pleased I am that it went so well. So the concept at the beginning was showing them how they could become financially independent in, say, 3 years when he reaches 60. And, you know, there's things they want to do. So we elaborated on these things like I was really getting them to think about what do they really want to do? What might they need to spend a lump sum of money on? Not just how much do you need? And we got through talking about doing the garage, putting a WC in and a wet room, having a laundry room downstairs and extending the house. And it was going to cost 150 grand. It's a lot. He talked about buying a boat, 30 grand, came to a figure, and then paying off the loans for the kids, you know, the student loans, about 30,000 each. So they're going to need an extra 250,000. And I'm running through it with them. And, you know, there's these big expenses, but they're going to bring them joy. And the but long and short of it is they can do it. They can hit all of these goals. They can have the income that they want in retirement. And, you know, they can pay for these, which is great. But go back 2 years, had a mortgage, you know, still got a mortgage today, but it's got a plan to be paid off now with actually some inheritance. And in that last 2 years, the dad's died. You know, so they've dealt with lots of things from going into care to him dying. So it's all very sad and emotional, of course, and dealing with it and going, driving hundreds of miles to his house to sort things out and going through probate. It's all very miserable. And then my client had fallen about 18 months ago, cracked his head, had a concussion and then couldn't fly. Thought he was going to lose his job. You know, thought this is it now. How am I going to pay off my mortgage? This is before his dad had passed away. So he's dealing with his dad. He's dealing with the situation there. Didn't have income coming in or it was a reduced income through sick pay. Then he might have lost his job and to work as a pilot because you've got to be super healthy and, you know, you've got to pass all these medicals. And I talked to him today because he's come through all the way through back to flying now after all this time. The change in mindset has been enormous. You know, so 1 minute he thought he could lose the house or never pay the mortgage off. Next minute they've come through it. And I said, look, you've got to be really grateful for this, you know, and celebrate this as a win. Because me now showing them a plan to say, okay, you can be financially independent and they've now got choice and freedom and flexibility. And I said, look, that's all good, but you've got to enjoy the small things, you know, be content, have things to look forward to. And to use one of your phrases, Warren, have a future that's bigger than your past, you know. Mm. Isn't that what you say?
Yeah, he is, yeah. Yeah, and I think it might have been coined from Dan Sullivan. I don't think I actually created it, but I do say it, yeah.
That. And I've taken that on board from what you said. I'm constantly learning from yourself as well as other people, most of it. This concept of, you know, it comes down to mindset, I think, and belief and planning and this resilience and stoicism and having this structure to your life. So I'm really pleased that I did my job well, helping them not having to worry about money, and then to plan out how we're going to do the things they want to do financially with a game plan and a cash flow and a forecast, but then giving them this structure. So we were talking about, you know, having date nights and going, you know, on holiday at certain points, and sort of, you know, he wants to say very keen to buy this boat and spend time on it. And I think that I just was really proud of the way that it went. So in the strap line that I have for planning your adventure, focus on happiness, plan for the future, live in the now. We were absolutely doing that. You know, we're doing all of those things.
Yeah. Makes you feel good, doesn't it?
It does. And it just shows that, you know, financial planning is one of the best, if not the best, profession and career you can have. You know, it's even better when it all goes right and you get clients that not just, I don't want them to be saying thanks all the time, but I'd rather them just feel like they've got freedom and flexibility and choice. If I can make them feel a certain way by filling about with the numbers and dealing with the tax and investments and taking all that boring stuff away from them so they don't have to think about it, they get the mindset right. And I was like, wow, this is great. Fantastic. You know, it's a noble profession because we're actually trying our very best to be a fiduciary, to help clients, put them first and, you know, look out for them. And it means I'm going to have a good night's sleep tonight. Good day. Check.
Yeah. No, completely agree. Completely agree. And that is a great way to wrap up the show, don't you think?
I think so. See you guys next time. Warren, how do we wrap up now?
We say, okay, thanks. This is a wrap for today. Thanks for joining us. Please make sure you like, share, and subscribe to our show. It does mean an awful lot to us. And we know that you're listening. Please leave any comments and questions you may have in the show notes, and we make sure we answer those in a future episode. So until next one, goodbye from me.
Goodbye from me. Sounds like a sign-off, doesn't it, from University Challenge. But see you guys next time. Enjoy and do bye-bye. Like and give us a 5-star review. Bye now.
Thank you for joining us for today's discussion. If you're enjoying this show, please subscribe to a podcast. It's a great way to support us. If you have questions or comments about this podcast or topics you'd like to suggest for the show, please put these in the comments section on YouTube. Remember, if you find yourself humming a theme song for the next week, it's not a sign of brainwashing, it's just a testament to our awesomeness. Or possibly a mild earworm. Consult a doctor if symptoms persist. If this show is designed to be informational only and does not constitute investment or financial advice, please contact a regulated financial advisor before taking any specific action.